Welcome to Frankly Speaking, a public service program of George Mason University, the state university in Northern Virginia. Eat, drink, and be merry, and tomorrow you may be obese. The holidays are upon us with all their cookies, pies, treats, and cocktails. Our New Year's resolution diets and exercise programs are still a good week away, but the goodies are on our plates today. Excessive eating and drinking during the holidays may be inevitable for some, but it need not be that way for you. Eating sensibly may become more of a reality once you realize some of the effects that your diet has on your health. You've heard it all by now. Too much sugar, too much salt, too much saccharin, too much cholesterol. Where does it end? And what about exercise, or lack of? The holidays seem to have a way of disrupting even the most regular exercise programs. You may be one of those folks who swears that come the first of the year, it's back to that exercise program that has been absent since last summer. Before sounding off with any more noble intentions, let's collect a few facts for support. I'm Ron Shaka, and with me today to help sort out these holiday health hazards is Libby Howes, the coordinator for health promotion at George Mason University. Libby, welcome to Frankly Speaking.
Thank you, Ron. It's good to be here.
Libby, there seems to be a certain type of paranoia that begins creeping into people's minds right around the holidays. Can you tell us a little bit about these fears?
Well, I think people do feel very uneasy when Christmas starts to approach because there's so much going on in their environment, so many things that are thrust upon them that if they perhaps had a choice, they might do differently, make different decisions, for example, with regard to eating or with regard to drinking. There's so much that might be thrust upon them at parties and so forth that dealing with that presents its own special problems. And I think that makes people rightfully feel uncomfortable and worried, often at Christmas time.
Often, people measure their hospitality by the amount of food and drink they can provide for their guests. What kind of recommendation can you give to the holiday host or hostess?
Well, I think the thoughtful holiday host or hostess these days thinks in terms of alternatives for people. That while, of course, they want to present a sumptuous feast for their guests, they should also consider the person that is concerned about his weight, or the person that might need to be restricted in some way, say a salt restriction. Many people have high blood pressure these days. So I think that anybody planning a party would do well to think about alternatives for people. Diet sodas along with the alcoholic beverages. Low-calorie munching foods. The old carrots and celery would be very appealing for a number of people and would be considered extremely thoughtful on the part of the guests, I think, in many instances.
What kind of recommendation can you give to the guest? What kind of strategy can they use to stop from overindulging?
Oh, there's a number of things that a guest can do. Several skills that we try to encourage people to adopt. One of the things is that when you get to a party, don't make a beeline for the refreshments, though you might often be shepherded that way by the host or hostess. Take a little bit of time to get there. And the tactic is called a delay tactic. So even if you take a couple of minutes to work your way over to the refreshments, that's better than going over there instantly. That's one thing you can do. Another thing that you can do is to look over the foods carefully and try to make your choices before you start loading up your plate. Look at what's available, and before you put a thing on your plate, try to make some decisions. Even a little bit of advanced planning helps people retain the control that they would like to have over what they eat. Because you asked earlier, you know, what worries people about Christmas and holiday times, and I think a lot of it is the loss of control over what they choose to eat and drink. So if you take a second to just think about what you might put on your plate, that's another thing. Once you have food on your plate, you can do a couple of things. One, and this is true for alcoholic beverages too, you can put your plate down, or if it's finger foods, put that finger food down between each bite. Don't stand there or sit and have something in your hand. Make a conscious effort, to put your food or your drink down so that when you want to have something to eat, you have to go and pick it up. That's another thing that'll help.
Okay, how can some of these tips be used to modify your eating habits over a lifetime?
Well, all of these things that I've suggested really have day-to-day applicability. You see, weight, which is something that I think a large number of us are concerned about, not being overweight. Americans are always on diets. There are a number of skills that people can learn and practice that are good eating habits, as contrasted to some of the poor eating habits that many of us have developed. And by that, I'm not talking about choices of food so much as actual food behaviors. A lot of our feelings of hunger, for example, are psychologically based. They are not based on actual physical hunger. Many of the times when we feel hungry, that feeling of hunger is triggered by something that's in our environment. That is, if we're accustomed to eating in front of the TV, for example, as many people are, then often all it will take is to have the TV on to make us, that triggers our sense of hunger. We'll feel hungry and we'll go get something to eat. So a lot of our triggers for hunger are out there in the environment, things that we've learned over a long period of time.
Okay. You're now doing a study on eating habits here at George Mason. Can you give me a little background on the study you're working on?
What we're working on at George Mason right now is to look at the eating patterns of older adults and to see what can be done to modify them. We have a number of people that are at George Mason for a two-day-a-week exercise program. And incorporated in that exercise program is a weight control class. And we're looking to see if people, when they adopt certain eating strategies and make certain things habits, that they will, to see if they can lose weight in conjunction with increased physical activity. See, that's the other side of the problem for many people, is that not only do we tend to eat, well, actually the data show that we don't eat as much now as people did 80 years ago. We actually consume less in terms of calories, but weight and overweight is still a big problem in this country, and part of the reason for this, in fact a large part of the reason for this, is that we are so sedentary as a nation. And one of the things that people can also do, especially at the holiday time, is to increase their level of physical activity. They even, you know, taking a walk before mealtime, and I say before rather than after, exercise, just even low-level exercise like walking, is excellent as a means to control appetite. People who get a little bit of exercise rather than none are much less inclined to hunger, and they're burning off more calories. They're toning up their muscles, and they're also helping themselves to deal with what a lot of people experience at holiday time, which is the holiday blues. Exercise is a good antidote to that.
The calorie cautious are usually aware of the candies and the cookies and cakes and so on, but what about the beverages that are served around the holidays?
Oh, beverages, especially the mixed drinks, are loaded with calories. I saw something the other day, I think it's a margarita that is equivalent to probably the most high-calorie dessert you can think of. Alcohol is a hidden source of calories for many people. They don't realize that alcoholic beverages usually have probably a minimum of 100 calories, and then when you start talking about the beers and the sweetened sherries and so forth, and you're talking, and the mixed drinks, you're talking about a lot of calories that can be consumed over a relatively short period of time. So the same suggestions, some of the same suggestions that I made about eating can be used for drinking as well.
Okay, without going into all of the special problems that alcohol creates during the holidays, what effects do drinking habits have on eating patterns?
They have a couple of important effects. One is that alcoholic drinks, just like coffee and tea, they stimulate hunger. So if you're trying to control your calories, then alcoholic drinks tend to counter that control. The other thing is also associated with the concern with control, and that is that alcohol, because it's a central nervous system depressant, tends to sedate those parts of the brain that regulate our behavior. And so when we start to drink beyond a certain point, then we're much less likely to be cautious about what we eat and careful. So alcohol is somewhat of a problem in that regard.
Assuming that people choose to ignore the moderation concept of eating and drinking, but opt for the "I'm starting that diet right after New Year's" syndrome, what are the pitfalls of this approach?
Oh, we are always, I think maybe it's characteristic of Americans, we always try to get 100% or nothing. And since we're human, we rarely do achieve that 100%. And when we fail, we tend to be pretty hard on ourselves. And what I think you see in situations like dieting or trying to quit smoking, you see people saying, "Well, I'm just going to do it flat out." Then when they fail, they berate themselves, and then they just let go of their whole effort instead of looking at any change like this as being pretty difficult. You know, what you're doing is changing a long ingrained habit. So what we would suggest is, yes, if you're going to make that New Year's resolution, that's fine. We certainly would like to encourage that. But make your New Year's resolution obtainable, and make it easily obtainable, and make it small. And by that I mean, don't set out to run a marathon right away, but say you're going to start by, you know, getting out and walking maybe 15 minutes, 10 minutes a day. Make your goals modest at first so you can achieve them.
Now, to wrap things up, if you had to recommend to somebody who's genuinely trying to get on the right foot as far as health goes, what would be their first step?
Well, I think one of the most important things that a person could do is to read, to get a hold of information that is reliable and valid. For example, one of the best books that I've seen is Jane Brody's nutrition book. And it's very comprehensive, it's interesting to read, and it's great, I think, for anybody's Christmas stocking. If you can't fit it in the stocking, put it under the tree. It's really a good start, and I think reading is perhaps one of the best places for people to start.
And do you feel that this will eventually lead them to what, exercise, diets, both?
It might help people make up their mind, and if they're, once they get started, it might really be an important reinforcement for them to keep with it.
Thank you for joining us today, Libby, on Frankly Speaking. I'm Ron Shaka, and my guest today has been Libby Howells, the coordinator for George Mason University's Health Promotion Center. Our technician is Penny Goodman. If you have any questions or comments, please call the George Mason Public Relations Office at 323-2138. Thank you for listening.